God gave King Nebuchadnezzar a forecast of all the kingdoms of the world right till down till the coming of Jesus Christ. And as we go over this very, very well-known passage, let's look at different aspects of it. I want you to go right back in time to the days of a man called Nimrod. It says in Genesis chapter 10, which is a very, very important genealogical chapter, verse 6, and the sons of Ham, Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. And then it comes on to verse 8, and Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, or Babylon. Now before this man Nimrod rose upon earth, God was considered the mighty one. In fact, we refer to him as the Almighty. He was the king. Nobody disputed this fact. But when Nimrod came on the site, on the scene, he first began his hunting expeditions. And then Nimrod, because wild beasts were a problem, and God had put a curse on the wild beasts too. There was enmity between the beasts of the field and mankind. And Nimrod was sort of a savior. So whenever a lion or a wild beast of that area attacked the flocks or the people, Nimrod would shoot it. And he trained a force of young men. He put them through sort of military training. Had a small army. And then when he turned his attention from hunting wild beasts to conquering neighboring villages and towns, and Nimrod became the first king on earth. Into his head came the idea, I can become powerful monarch through sheer brute force, through arms, through skill, through warfare. And he became a mighty hunter, not in front of the Lord, but in place of the Lord. He was the mighty one before God. And we can trace the rebellion or the world empires, the idea of ruling an empire, to this man, Nimrod. He's actually, in his study in the Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop, you'll see that he became a kind of a godlike figure. And if you wanted salvation from anything, animals or enemies, it was to Nimrod you turned. Now, it goes on in verse 10, he went on, and he, out of that land, that's Babel, he went forth Ashur, which actually is that area, the people, and he builded Nineveh. Nimrod actually was the architect of Nineveh itself. And a very, very interesting passage in the Two Babylons about Nimrod and the first cult, because he, when he died, and another hunter turned up, they said it was the father turned up as the son, that Nimrod was the son. And the whole pagan philosophy which Babylon adopted dates back to this person, Nimrod. He has various names and godlike characteristics. Nebuchadnezzar, as you all know, was an idolater. He was an idol worshipper. He worshipped images. So God gave him this spectacular dream, and God is not only telling Nebuchadnezzar the future of mankind, he's telling us. This was written down, and written down for the benefit of everybody who wants to study Bible prophecy. And when we study what Nimrod did and what Nebuchadnezzar did, and what succeeding empire, for say, rulers and kings and Caesars have done, We see there are three ways that mankind have chosen, not chosen, but three ways that are sort of popular in this world's history of how nations and empires have formed. The first one is by force of arms. All right? A man comes and gets the idea that I can conquer this village or this town or this territory or this nation. I can conquer it by brute force, just take over. There's nothing the population can do. I'll just come in with an army and overthrow it. And hundreds of kings down the ages have had that sort of dream. Through brute force, they'll just conquer people. And when they die, they leave their kingdoms to their child, their son, and he becomes the king or the emperor or the Caesar, and so on it goes down. And that system of overthrowing nations is one, probably the very first one that came on the scene. The next system came from ancient Greece. It's popular now, it's democracy. This philosopher thought, this business of conquering by brute force is not good. It means the strongest person takes over and he's not necessarily the wisest. In fact, more often than not, he isn't. Because muscle power doesn't mean to say brain power. So, it would be far better, said Democritus, if we elected a leader. If everybody voted this person in, he considered his wisdom, considered his power, considered his motives, and then we all decided and chose someone. And that's what we're using now. And the world's politicians, and millions of people in this world, billions of them, think that this is the answer to the world's problems. You can't take over a country by brute force. It doesn't work. Many, many rulers have tried it. Let me name a few. There's Stalin, Hitler, Napoleon, Charlemagne, Mussolini, Genghis Khan, Pol Pot, Idi Amin. And of course, the one in the Gulf War, Saddam Hussein. They think they could take over by brute force. But democracy says, no, we'll select the leader. And by and large, in some countries where the population is educated and knows the facts and can read about what politicians are saying and promise and can study their track record, it works reasonably well. But soon democracy is going to fall flat on its face. This is not a God-given system. It came from pagan Greece and has terrible weaknesses because it's based on the idea that all men are equal. And that is a fallacy because all men are not equal. All men should be given equal rights. But to say that this man is equal to this man is absolute rubbish. Because some men know all the facts, their ways, they make a good weighed judgment, and others, they can't even read and write. They can't even read the voting paper. They can't read the manifesto. They have to be shown little pictures. And they can't even sign their names. They have to vote their candidate in by the thumbprint. So to say that this person's equal to this person is absolute nonsense. So, in certain countries where democracy is being tried and elections are being held, it's chaos. Ends in a bloodbath, as we're going to see shortly in South Africa. So, we go along with democracy, and we won't run down democracy too much, because it's so popular. But the fact is, democracy, with all the other governmental systems, is going to be swept aside. Because it doesn't work. Politicians are criminals in many countries. Politicians promise the earth, but they can't deliver the goods. The population, the counters of the votes, the whole setup is riddled with sin in many countries. And even though we send in observers to try and have a fair election,
The fact is that the results are anything but fair. But even if they were spotlessly fair, and even if all the population was really educated, it would be still impossible to choose the best man for the job. Because we are only deciding on promises and outward appearances. And you look at five candidates and you say, I think he's the best. And he might be the worst. The best man might not even be running for the post. All right? So that's another system. Brute force is the first one. Force of arms. And the next one is we elect a leader. The third form of rulership is appointment, commissioning by God. The man is not elected. He's not chosen by his fellows. He doesn't decide by his own brute force and his skill of arms to take over. He's chosen, elected, appointed by God. So he's obviously the best man for the job. He might not even know it. He might not think that. And even when he's offered the post, he might resist it. He might say, no, choose somebody else. I don't think I can do this. But God looks down and says, he's a chosen vessel. I've appointed him to do certain things. Now go and do it. All right, so there are these three methods of government or rulership. Taking it upon yourself and forcing your will on other people, getting people to elect you, or being chosen by God. Now in this story of Daniel 2, we see the first four world empires were actually brute force and then handing down from king to king or Caesar to Caesar. The people didn't elect King Nebuchadnezzar. He was a ruthless king. His army just took over. The people didn't elect Darius and Cyrus and the Persian kings. They just, with their armies, came and conquered. People didn't elect Alexander the Great. You read the story of Alexander the Great. He was a lightning warrior. He had conquered a city or a town and it was gone over the horizon before they realized what hit them. He was so fast. People didn't elect the Roman Caesars. They had their brutal armies that just took over. All right? But the government that takes over from Rome was the fourth one and then goes into the feet. Wine and clay. That's where we are right now. We are in this last world empire. We're not going to elect the coming world leader. He's going to take over by brute force, like the four that went before him. Alright? On the scene is coming the Antichrist. He's not an elected person. He's not an appointed person. He comes in with brute force. Alright? I'm not going to talk about him. A subject, actually, which we tried to put into the Kilmarnock Standard, the coming world government. They announced, put the name in, but not the title. It's about the coming world government. And that little prelude of Babylon, head of gold, Medo-Persia, breast and arms of silver, belly and thighs, belly of brass, right? Legs of iron, Rome. And then right down in the feet of iron and clay, this world government, this is conquering the whole world. This is not the ancient Roman Empire. This is the resurrected Roman Empire. This is the modern new world government that's coming now. All right? It's not just Europe. It's a new world government that's going to crush the whole earth and devour it. In Daniel chapter 7, there's another dream that Daniel had this time. And he sees four beasts. He sees a lion first, then a bear, then a leopard. And then he sees another beast. He couldn't even compare it to any other animal. He says a great, terrible, like a monster came up. iron teeth, bronze claws. It says, devoured the whole earth, which the Roman Empire never did. This one has 10 horns, and then that little horn comes up, all right? So we are coming up right now to this last stage of world government, all right? I know nations are fighting amongst themselves right now to pick their leaders, and in Britain we're coming up to an important election next month, local elections, and then European elections. And the candidates are out putting in the leaflets through the doors, and soon you'll get each one's manifesto, what he can do, vote for him, what he has promised. And these things we take with a pinch of salt. And even though we are in one of the most, I shall say, forward leading nations of the world, the fact is that most people in this country don't trust the politicians. Because we know full well that very often, well-meaning though they are, they cannot deliver the goods. They cannot even do what they've promised. Because circumstances change so fast in this world, they don't have the power very often to do what they would like to do. So democracy, even in a country like ours, or Europe, or America, is not working as people would like it to work. Because it's actually not a God-given system. Democracy is as ineffective as the one before. Maybe not as bad as the one before, where dictatorship and brute force ruled, but certainly as ineffective. And in some countries, it is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster in some countries, where the majority will just bring absolute ruin. But we're not talking about democracy. We're coming up to a world government now, shortly, which is different from the previous four. The previous four went in for brute force. Their armies walked in and just conquered. Within a few days, they had taken over. When Babylon stood, and Nebuchadnezzar stood on the walls of Babylon and says, is not this the great Babylon that I had built? Mighty place. Persian army came in, down the river, diverted the river Euphrates, marched in under the steel gates, all the big things that went into the river bed, marched in. The guards were all drunk because they were having a great big orgy and a banquet. A little doors, they went into Babylon and slaughtered all the leaders from the 120 provinces that turned up for this big banquet, and drinking from the holy vessels, mocking the God of Israel. And then the writing came on the wall, and Babylon the Great fell just like that, within a night. And Belshazzar was killed, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. Persian army too, and then the Medes and Persians, they lasted for some years, and they were conquered. Then the Romans came, and the Romans fell apart too. The Roman Empire crashed because of sin. That's a love of pleasure. But this world empire is not going to come like the old one and conquer by brute force. Okay? It's a different world empire. It conquers in a different way. And you can see it coming up. Right? You can see it coming up. The kind of pressure it puts on a nation before it takes it over. And it's a money pressure. You can apply sanctions to a nation. If you don't fall into line, you just have nothing to do with you. Because its tactics are totally different. And we're living in this world government. If you don't want to fall into line with us, then we won't sell to you. We won't let you buy from us. Get out. And these sanctions are being applied to nations now. And they're far more effective than bombing the place. Because people can stand bombing, they can stand fighting, they can still get their food and their trade, they can put up with that. But if everybody stands aside and says, I won't let you buy my goods, and I won't sell you my goods, just get out. That's a terrifying form of pressure. And it's being applied by this world government with great effect right around the world now. It's different to the four that went before that, in that it's not a powerful one. The others came in and before you knew where you are, they would just bash you to the ground. But this one economically can slowly, slowly weigh you out. It's the same policy that's going to be used against us. If you don't want to join us, then don't buy from us, and we won't sell. You won't be allowed to buy and sell, because this is the sanction. You have decided yourself to keep out of our world government. It's your choice. It's not that we are being cruel to you. You are being awkward. And that's a very effective weapon used by this last world government. But this world government, which is going to last for a little while and is coming right up before us, is going to come the leader of it. Okay? He's different. Daniel 11 explains it. How he takes over. One day I'll go into detail on that. But he's clever. And he slowly takes over by trade and business. And we are going to live through this, all right? But the stone which Craig read about, which is always a symbol of the kingdom of heaven or Christ, Christ's kingdom, cut out without human hands. In other words, it's not a human product. It's not a man-made kingdom. It hasn't come up the way these earthly empires have come up, either by brute force or elections. It's a God-directed, appointed. Christ didn't decide to be the King of Kings. He didn't say, I'm going to be King of Kings by brutal force. He was appointed. God appoints him to be the judge even. And God has chosen him. And every single person in this coming kingdom is appointed. Now that's important because we are candidates for this kingdom. We're in school at the moment. I know we are actually sitting in a literal classroom, but we are in school and we are being trained for positions in that kingdom, and I want to talk about that in a little while. I first want you to think of the departments in a kingdom. All right? I don't want to spend time writing this all up, but I've got, think of the United Kingdom. It's not even a kingdom now, certainly not united. It's beginning to feel pressures. Nations have broken away, and even within the United Kingdom, countries want to break away. Scotland wants to break away, and Wales wants to break away, and even Yorkshire wants to break away. But anyway, think of the United Kingdom, right, of about 50, 55 million people. There are various departments. There's the Department of Education. Now in the coming kingdom there'll be these departments too. Alright? This department can teach the three R's in science and arts and history and geography and so on. Then there's the judicial department, the law courts. Under that I've put the judges, the magistrates, the barristers, the police who enforce the laws. They don't make the laws. Police don't make the laws. The judges don't make the laws. Parliament makes these laws. The judges carry them out. Police enforce them. All right. And there's the armed forces who defend the country. Then there's another department, say, the great manufacturing departments of this country, that people that actually make the goods. All right. Whether it's cars or tractors or clothes or whatever, they're actually making the things. There are huge thousands and millions of people involved in just making things. Then there's another department, say the communications. People are being kept in contact and given information and communicating, right? Under this, you've got the media, television, radio, the newspapers. Then there's energy department. They're dealing with heating, lighting, and
propulsion of various kinds, you know, fuel and so on. Then there's the agricultural department. It's called the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries, DAFF. Okay? Then there's housing department. They deal with where people live and flock, in blocks of flats and housing estates. And then there's the transport. Imagine this huge department of transport, handling all that rail and roads, you know, airlines. Then the Department of Tourism. Very, very big department. In fact, in some countries, it's the biggest department. Tourism earns more money for some countries than everything else put together. Right. Now, this Department of Environment becoming more and more important now. It's the air, that's the rivers, that's the lakes and the pollution of the air, and, you know, the earth itself. Then there's the Welfare Department, Trade, Inland Revenue, Leisure, Arts. In every single one of these departments, I'll tell you what I'm coming up to now. There are officials. I want to run through some of these officials. We know about them, but I'm only talking about them now because in the coming kingdom, which is a 1,000-year reign, all these departments might not be identical names, but similar sort of duties they'll be performing. There'll be these departments, and there'll be officials in these departments. Now, here are some of the officials in all these departments. All right? There are, in the kingdom, these are the officials I put in. There are priests. In the kingdom of Israel, before they started picking a king, rejected the prophets and priests, and they picked a king who handed over to his son and so on. There were priests. There are teachers. There were musicians. Each man had a particular job to do. There were healers. In our present world, in every department, we have managers, executives, administrators, clerks, messengers. We have judges, solicitors, police officials, accountants, treasurers, secretaries, bookkeepers, instructors, lecturers, librarians, all kinds of workers, architects, builders, joiners, electricians, plumbers, environmental officials, pilots and drivers and guides and all these jobs. Now in the coming kingdom of heaven, the millennium, when Christ comes to this earth, he's going to now set up a kingdom, all right? That's what he read about, the stone hits the earth and it grows and fills the whole earth, all right? All these other governments, some are kingdoms, like the United Kingdom, the present government. This present government will be swept aside like chaff. The American government will be swept aside like chaff. The Indian government and the German government and all the other governments of the world, some good, some bad, or should I say some bad, some very bad, will all be swept aside. All the officials of all these governments are going to be swept aside. Now that's a hard concept to really grasp, but that's what it's saying. Every governmental official in this present world and every form of government will be swept aside. Why? Because they're all come on the scene by systems other than what God elects to set aside, God decided. They've either come in by brute force, like Saddam Hussein's government, or Pol Pot's government, or what's happening there in Central Africa at the moment. They've either come in that way, or they've come in by a democratic system, which is from ancient pagan Greece, where people pick politicians who can promise whatever they please. Very, very often they're corrupt to the core. So all these governments will be swept aside. And all the officials in these governments will be swept aside. And all the councillors in all the counties of Britain and in America and India and Japan and so on will all be swept aside. That's an amazing, devastating thing to think. How do you manage the world now?
In Britain there are some 50 million people.
And there are about 10,000 at least in the civil service, and 500,000 officials. If you take local government and add that, you'll add another 500,000 or two. You'll have about 2 million people involved in running this one country of 55 million people. So if you want to run a world of 5 billion people, you're going to have a lot of officials, because there's such a lot to do. And these officials, believe it or not, are being trained now. Now that might strike you as an absolutely unbelievable concept, but it's true. Because when Jesus Christ comes to this earth and takes over this government, he's going to appoint people. We're not going to elect each other. We're not going to go in and take over a government by force and say, I'm in charge here, I'll kill you if you stand in my way. We're going to be elected. And every single official from the top man to the bottom is going to be appointed. And God is looking now at the human race, and he's got a historical photograph of everybody's performance right back to Adam, of the people and what they're interested in and how good they are at that job. And when he says right in Britain, or say the Sahara Desert, we're going to reclaim the Sahara Desert. I flew over the Sahara a couple of years back. I looked at this massive, thousands of miles of sand. What a job reclaiming this place. Who are you going to put in charge? Some people said, that's the last place I want to be. But there are some people environmentally inclined. This is wonderful. This is a challenge. Give me 200-300 years and I'll sort this place out. They would jump at that. That would be heaven for them. To others. There are some people, marine biologists, for instance, who love nothing better than sorting out the oceans. The young girl in California who spends half a day under the sea level. She's swimming about looking at the floor of the ocean, planting in a certain plant. Now she uses the ocean bed like a garden. So just these kind of people would love to do that job, and God would look at them and say, sorry, that person is not only a believer, but they're good at the job. All right, now I'm going to talk for a little while on the qualifications that you will need for your post in the millennium, in the coming kingdom. All right? At the moment, if you went for a job, whether it's a politician or just an ordinary worker, they look you up and you give a CV, all right? Which is all your qualifications on a page or two. And that's your knowledge, what all certificates you've gained, what experience you have, and any other information you might put in a letter of your fitness for this particular post. All right. Now, we all have spiritual CVs, and we don't write them down. But God knows your qualifications. I'm going to mention a few qualifications here. All right. Which he's going to look for. In this present world, if you went to go for a job, they're not going to ask you, are you a believer in the God of Israel? Very unlikely. If you want to apply for a political post or put yourself up a candidate, nobody's interested in whether you're a believer in God or your personal life. In fact, they make a big thing about it in the papers and the media now, right? We should not be looking at a man's personal life and what he does in his bedroom. We're only concerned that can he do this job properly, not his personal life or his beliefs. Right? But in the coming kingdom, the first thing that God's going to look for, are you qualified, what sort of a life you are, all right?
or your holy person, or you're a thief, or a cheat, or a liar, or whatever. So that's the first thing you look at. Now you might be the most honest person on earth, and you might be the best person on earth, and you might be the most faithful person on earth, but you might know nothing about the job, so you're not qualified. Okay? Because integrity in itself is not enough for a job. It's like you might have a wonderfully faithful, honest man. But if you're looking for a bus driver, this guy's no good because he can't drive. Okay? So you have to be good, holy, and able. You've got to be able. Alright? And now's the time, if you're interested in any post, now's the time to become able. You not only have to be able to do a job, you have to be keen on the job. Look, some people are able, they're quite able to do something, but they don't like it. They hate it. They're very honest people. They're very kind people. They're very good people. They're very able people, but they don't like the job. They hate the job. So, they're not qualified. Because you must love the job. Isn't that so? You're not going to pick a person who hates the job, even though he can do it. Alright? So you've got to be good, you've got to be able, and you've got to be keen. Because if you're not keen, it's no good point in you. It's better to have somebody else who's less able but more keen, because eventually he will become able as you are, because he's keen on the job. And that's a very, shall I say, sure stepping stone to becoming able. So you've got to be keen. You've also got to be experienced. Not such an important thing. In this world, it's quite important. You must have the experience. But in the coming kingdom, you can gain experience. You've got time. You've got 1,000 years. This reign is going to last 1,000 years, and it's going to cover at least 6 billion people. It's not like the present British government, where you can say, well, we've been in power for 4 years, and we've got 50 million people. We're talking about 1,000 years, and we're talking about 5 billion or 6 or maybe 7 billion people. Alright, so here we are. We are getting ready for that. Now we're talking about a manifesto. Out there, this manifesto is rubbish. They think it's nonsense. If you talk to them about it, they think you're gone off your head. They think you're a patient for the psychiatric chair. And you can't blame them, because what we are talking about is something totally beyond their range. We know, long before it happened, that those four kingdoms came and went. Nebuchadnezzar didn't believe it when Daniel told him. Oh, he said, this is great, this guy has actually told me what I dreamed last night. We'll worship him, certainly. But a few years later, he's putting up this big golden calf, a golden image from head to foot, solid gold. Right? Not gold, silver, and bronze, iron on it. Oh, gold, my kingdom's going to last. Golden head, golden foot. And he didn't think he was ever going to be replaced, but he was replaced. And the Persian Empire came and went. And the Grecian Empire came and went. And the Roman Empire came and went. So the kingdom of stone is about to strike. Right? And when it strikes, God is going to appoint people. Now I want to close with Luke chapter 19. Okay. In this chapter, which Jesus gives a wonderful little story, very well known, but I do want you all to think about yourselves as these servants. Luke chapter 19. All right. The chapter, I'm going to start from verse 11. And as they heard these things, he added and spake a parable, because he was nigh to Jerusalem. And because, this parable was given because of this reason. Because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. They thought the kingdom's going to come any minute now. Even the disciples thought, oh, give a few years, give a few months, and we'll all, you know, we'll be sitting on the right hand and left, and I'll be the treasurer, and he'll be the boss, and so on. And Jesus' kingdom will set up, throw up the Romans, and we'll be in charge. And Jesus said, hold on, we've got a parable to tell you. Because you think the kingdom's coming immediately, it isn't. He knew it's going to be a long way away. All right. And then he said, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. That's himself. And he called his 10 servants and delivered to them 10 pounds. And he said, occupy till I come. His citizens hated him and sent a messenger after him saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. The vast majority of people don't want Jesus Christ to reign over them. All right. That's a fact. Came to pass that when he returned, having received the kingdom, so this is Jesus, goes to heaven, gets the authority, comes back. Then he commanded his servants to be called unto him to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Alright, this is a little parable to teach us. We are the servants. Then came the first thing, Lord, your pound has gained 10 pounds. Good. Well done, good and faithful servant, be thou. Have thou authority over 10 cities. And he's put in charge of 1 pound. Insignificant amount. Maybe a few months' wages. Right? Insignificant amount. Be in charge of 10 cities. Do you know anybody in charge of 10 cities? Or you can have the mayor of New York in charge of 1 city. Very big man. Or the mayor of London. But do you know anybody in this world who's in charge of 10 cities? Then you turn the next turn and says, good sir, you charge of 5 cities. Now under this person, you got every department. You get the housing department of that city. You get the transport department of the city. You get the police force of that city. You get the judicial, all the judges and all in that city. This one person in charge of all of these people. And in each department you get all the little officials, all the managers, all the executives, all the clerks, all the treasurers, all the accountants, all the workers, under this one person. And all he was given is 1 pound. Then this other fellow comes along. One man, the man who had 1 pound. Here's your pound. Right? And look what he said. I knew, I feared thee. You're an austere man, you're hard. You're doing all the work and you're getting all the money. I knew you. You're just working, you know, we're doing all the work, you're getting cash. That thou takest up where thou layest not down. In other words, you reap the benefits of our labor. And reapest that thou dost not sow. We'll do the sowing and you're going to get it. Ha, I saw through all that, boy. So I hid your pound in the ground. But Christ is not like that. In fact, when the fellow came back with 10 pounds, I've gained another 10. He says, oh, I don't want it, you keep it. He didn't want the pound. He just gave it to that fellow. And he says, thou wicked servant. You know the story well. Thou should have given my money to the bank, and at my coming I might have required mine own with usury. Take the pound from him and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. He didn't say take the pound from him and put it back in my pocket. No. Or take the fellow who has 10 pounds, give me that 10 pounds. No. Well, Christ is not interested in taking back the odd pound or two from anyone. And then they said, but he's already got 10 pounds. Lord, he hath 10 pounds. And then Christ answers, for I say unto you, everyone that hath shall more be given, and from him that hath not, even that which he hath shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies which would not that I should reign over them, bring them hither and slay them before me. This is Jesus Christ talking. When the Christian church thinks Jesus Christ is some sort of a softy, you know, he's a little bit of a, you know, he couldn't hurt a flea. But he's going to slaughter millions of people. In fact, they're going to be burnt in the lake of fire in the presence of the Lamb. God the Father turns his head away. Christ is going to be looking on. He says, slaughter this guy. So here we are, we're coming up to this stage. The world government is taken. The beast will come on the stage. And he's going to apply sanctions to the church. Like they're doing to Serbia at the moment. Because this is a new way of taking over people. This is a new way of control.
don't buy from me, we won't sell to you. We won't batter you to death. But if that's the way you want to play the game, cheerio, stay out. All right? But when this world government is swept aside, because it's useless, trying to take over nations by brute force is out, it doesn't work. Trying to elect leaders does not work.